Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome into the fastest 2 hours in radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell, on this Good Friday as we get you set to celebrate the Easter holiday. We're also looking forward to the start of the 2014 NBA playoffs. So indeed, it is absolutely my favorite time of the year. And if you listen to our show each and every week, you know how much I love tracking and talking about the Dallas Mavericks and what an incredible season that they have had, 49 wins. Back in September, of course, they started training camp with essentially a fresh roster. I mean, 9 new players. And so earlier this week, I was up in Dallas. I had a chance to do a sit-down interview with Brandon Wright. You're going to hear that in tonight's program. Also, the wonderful Brian Cuban, a best-selling author who we invited back on our show, shares his courageous and inspirational story of overcoming addiction and eating disorders and BDD. So you don't want to miss. But right now, we're going to head to Lincoln, Nebraska. We're going to be talking with Husker great Jason Peter, because we've got a lot to talk about and recap the Masters. Jay, it's good to have you with us this weekend.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's break it down. That is our first order of business. And who thought Bubba Watson would be adding a second green jacket to his wardrobe? No Tiger, but it certainly was very intriguing to watch. It was an emotional weekend, to say the least.
I thought it was great. I mean, I'm shocked, I guess, at the ratings. You know, they're talking about it's the worst since 1993 when Bernard Langer won the green jacket. I thought it was great. I did. I loved the Jordan Spieth aspect of it, and certainly, you know, CBS maybe went a little overboard with the whole the youngest player ever to win. But I think that's what television does. I mean, they exaggerate everything and they ride something and until it's not there anymore. But, you know, I think what around hold maybe 7 or 8 in that final round. I think Spieth maybe was up by 2, and I thought he was going to break away. I really did. But I think it shows you what type of golfer Bubba is and, you know, what he's got pumping inside of him. You know, you kind of find out if you got the real thing flowing through your veins, or you got Kool-Aid, you know, flowing through your veins. But Bubba, I mean, just it's amazing to watch him. I mean, when he gets up and he's hitting those drives, I mean, what an advantage for a player to be able to hit, you know, 8-9 iron pitching wedge in, as to where other guys are debating whether or not they're going to lay up. Or, you know, they got to pull out a long iron to go for the green. So you got to tip your hat, I think, to the job that Bubba did.
Well, Bubba's got so much power in his game, and you look at 2014, it really has just been such a tremendous year for him so far. I mean, the win at Augusta, his second in his career, but also, top 10. I mean, 7 in his PGA starts this year. I mean, you talk about a small-town guy named Bubba, I mean, with 2 green jackets. I mean, and the future just continues to be very, very bright for him. What do you see, Jason, are the keys to his victory?
Well, I certainly think, you know, the way that he can hit the ball off the tee box, but
puts him in a good position, doesn't it?
Everybody knows that that's not going to win you green jacket. You know, you got to be able to putt. And, you know, Bubba's been, he's been pretty vocal about the way he approaches the game. And he's not a guy that is going to sit out on the range day after day after day. You know, he likes golf because it makes him happy. I think he enjoys going out. He enjoys playing it. He doesn't look at it as a job. I think he his whole kind of training schedule revolves around winning majors. I think that's what he wants out of his golf career, is to just win as many majors. You know, the stuff in between, and the amount of money, I think, you know, that some guys maybe are driven by, I don't think that is necessarily him. Certainly he's got a comfortable lifestyle. You know, he's not standing out on any street corners asking for change. So he's done well for himself.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I mean, you watched the Masters, and there were such examples. I mean, there was, you know, Ricky Fowler in that final round. He was starting to make a push there, and he ends up three putting. I forget, maybe it was eight or something. And, I mean, you're looking at like a 3-4 footer that I think most people thought, this is in. Boom, rims out. And he ends up with a 4-5 footer, you know, and then he comes back and rims that one out. And it's just like, that is the truest test, I think, of somebody's ability on the green that they'll have all year. You know, you really kind of find out, I think, what a guy is made of on the green down at Augusta.
We are going one-on-one with Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment, an outstanding three-time national champion at the University of Nebraska. We're taking time to recap the Masters. We're also going to be talking about Nebraska's spring game and preview the upcoming NFL draft at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Join us right now online at E Radio Sports. You know, one of the things, one more quick hit on Bubba Watson. I just thought, you know, when he finished out his round and everything, to see his young son Caleb walking up to him and he picked him up. I mean, as a parent, I know you can relate to this too. It's just, I mean, a lot of emotion there. I have to tell you, I've never been crying so much watching golf. I mean, it was an incredible Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, that's what kids do to you, I think. It just changes, I think, the way that you approach things. And whether you're a golfer, you're a parent, I think you're just a fan of golf. I think when you watch that, and certainly for Bubba, you know, the whole thing, the whole process, I think, of adopting Caleb, I think, has been something that he's talked about openly. And it was, what, about 2 years ago when he won his first green jacket.
Yes.
That's when I think maybe they first, Caleb came into their life, and you know, it's now to see him, he's growing up, and you know, it will get even better for Bubba when his son starts to understand, you know, and be able to appreciate kind of what his daddy's doing out there on the course. You know, I think you see it in NFL locker rooms, and it's something as a young guy in the locker room, you see your teammates, and sometimes, you know, there's kids, their sons that come into the locker room and they're 7-8 years old, and their dad has the coolest job in the world, you know, and they want to be like their dad so much because of what, you know, he does for a living. And it's just the coolest thing in the world to see. And I imagine it's only going to get better for him.
We are recapping the 2014 Masters with Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. I promise we're going to talk some Nebraska football here in just a moment. But what about Jordan Spieth? I mean, how do you think he handled the spotlight? I mean, so much pressure.
Yeah, and, you know, some people are saying there was some immaturity reactions and the way he was handling some stuff. I could tell you this. If I was 20 years old on that platform, I would have wished that I could have handled myself the way that Jordan Spieth. I think golf in general just has some really good young guys. But Jordan, I think Rory, I think these guys handle themselves really, really well in front of the media. These are top-notch pressure situations. I mean, you can't extreme pressure situations. And, you know, it's easy for some people who have never been in those situations to say, you know, he didn't handle himself rightly, or he should have done this, he should have done that. He's 20 years old. He's going to learn. You know, he'll probably look back in 5-10 years and say, golly, I can't believe I acted that way, or I said that or did that. But I think in general, as a whole, you look at the whole picture of Jordan Spieth and the things that he says. I mean, I was just watching, you know, the press conference maybe on, it was the Wednesday before the tournament actually started, and I'm thinking to myself, man, this kid has got it together. Just, you know, the way that he was handling the media and the questions that were coming his way, I was thinking, 20 years old, you know, he is way beyond his years in the way he was handling himself.
Well, I love this young man, Jordan Spieth. I mean, what a gift to the game of golf, this new generation of golfers that are coming up. Very, very exciting. Hey, listen, Jason, we've got to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with much more of Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. Stay close at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker Campbell. Remember, we love to hear from you. Join us online at eRadioSports, eRadioSports.com, as we have got some very special interviews posted on there. Brandon Wright, the Dallas Mavericks, and of course, the wonderful Brian Cuban. You want to check out those interviews. But right now, our focus and our attention is on Jason Peter with our weekly The Under the Helmet segment. We're going to do a recap of Nebraska's spring game. But Jason, one of the questions I have to ask you, the NCAA, they approved unlimited meals and snacks for athletes. And my question to you is, we both were full scholarship athletes. Did you ever go to bed hungry as a student athlete?
I can't recall going to bed with my stomach growling.
I can only wonder how many calories you consumed in a day.
What's that?
I said, I wonder how many calories you consumed in a day.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I was one of those guys that had to force feed themselves, kind of maintain their weight. You know, and I think it's great that even the non-scholarship athletes are at least getting meals paid for them, because, you know, whether or not you're on the first team defense or offense, you're out there for the same amount of time. And you could argue that these guys have it a lot tougher than the scholarship guys. You know, they're usually out there as punching bags and tackling dummies. The least the university could do is pay for some food. So I'm all on board with that. But, you know, I don't know if, you know, you hear about the Shabazz kid from UConn talking about going to bed hungry. And I don't know if he's the right guy. You know, I don't know if somebody with tattoos up and down their arms is the right guy to say that. I think, and I don't know his case. I don't know, you know, his life story and everything. But I think kids today have just a hard time with organization. And, you know, he could be where if he has got an extra $300 left over from scholarship, I'm going to go down to a tattoo shop and get myself a new tattoo, rather than think, you know what, maybe there's a time at the end of the month when, you know, money is getting thin that I may need this money to get a snack or two when, you know, training table is closed. So I know there are some legitimate cases and guys, you know, that really need the money. But I also think that these kids would be better suited maybe to have a course or a lecture on managing what they have. But I also think that the NCAA can be, you know, they're lurking around here in dangerous waters, I think. You know, I think you can start, if you allow this, you know, what's next? You know, will, because there's certainly going to be the schools that are going to push the limit, right? And I saw something where, you know, is USC going to start bringing in, you know, Wolfgang Puck to cook dinners at night? And this was an issue back at Nebraska, I know, where they declared that our training table, this was years ago, was an advantage over what other schools could have, because we were eating crab legs and filet mignon the day before games, and, you know, the University of Tulsa or some other school didn't have that luxury. So that created an unfair playing field. Well, I got to imagine that this is going to be the same, because just it's the nature of the beast of college football, that the coaches or the powers that be, they're gonna push it like they push everything, right? And there's gonna be loopholes somewhere, and it's going to create that imbalance, I think, where, you know, the Tulsas or the Boise States, are they going to be able to bring in, for example, the celebrity chef to cook for, you know, their athletes on Friday nights? I just think that they have to be careful here with the next step and how exactly they structure this whole thing.
You know, the one thing, I always felt so sorry for the wrestlers and the gymnasts. I mean, they'd never come and sit at our table. All the post players, we're sitting there eating, you know, like consuming a ton of calories, and I know they're going to bed hungry every single night.
The wrestlers have got garbage bags on, and they're looking at you as, you know, you're eating your steak and thinking, oh my God, they're just drooling from the mouth.
It is so true. Hey, listen, we're quickly running out of time. We wanted you to give us the pulse on the Nebraska spring game. Who were the top spring game performers?
Well, Amani Cross, the running back, he's a backup. He kind of took most of the reps. And Amir Abdullah didn't really take part in the live stuff. You know, he's going to be Nebraska's Heisman Trophy candidate this year, and he's all that I think that he's built up to be. I really like him, but you know, the issue I think lies at quarterback still. Tommy Armstrong is he kind of went into spring ball as the number one, and he's coming out of it as the number one, but the same issues I think plagued him in spring that happened last year, and it was three plays into the red-white game he threw a pick. And it was turnovers last year. That's Nebraska's, that's their Achilles heel. And they get careless with the ball. And ultimately, if you turn the ball over, you know, I think you're in for a long season. And Nebraska had, I think, maybe two teams in Division I that were worse at turning the ball over. So They've got to do something to get that cleaned up. You know, certainly with Bo Pelini and the infamous cat that he now has taken a liking to, this parody account from Twitter. you know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners saw it out on, I think ESPN ran it on their top plays, Bo Pelini carrying a cat out.
Oh, yeah.
Doing the tunnel walk. It's comical.
Jason Peter has been with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I hate to cut you off, but we got to go, Jay. Thanks so much for joining us this weekend.
Thanks for having me.
Much more straight ahead at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Okay, the 2014 NBA playoffs will get underway on Saturday, and what a ride it has been. And we're getting ready to kick it up a notch. We're going to keep a close watch on the 16 teams that made the playoffs this year, the road to the championship. In fact, earlier this week, I was up in Dallas. I had a chance to catch up with the Dallas Mavericks' Brandon Wright, Mr. Efficient, who has had a terrific season, a key reserve for the Mavericks, averaging 9 points, 4 rebounds, and in fact missed the first 23 games of the season due to an injury sustained to his a fracture in his left shoulder. He is always be ready, and I know you're going to enjoy this special interview with Dallas Mavericks' Brandon Wright. Brandon, thank you so much for joining us at Yahoo Sports Radio.
Appreciate you having me on.
Well, congratulations to you and to your teammates for advancing to the 2014 NBA playoffs after facing a very difficult matchup against the Phoenix Suns on Saturday night. How does it feel to achieve one of your team's goals, to see it come into fruition, especially after not making the playoffs last year?
Well, it was a tough season for us. Overall, you know, it was, you know, every game was crucial. Every game meant something these last 2 months. You know, we've been working hard. We've been in and out the playoff picture the entire year. And when we clinched, it was just a big relief. You could see the celebration. You could feel the pressure come off. And, you know, we're happy to be going back after missing out last year.
Well, let's reflect on that game on Saturday night against the Phoenix Suns. Monte Ellis was sensational, 37 points. Dirk caught fire in the second half, 21 of his 23. You had that double-double, huge block shots in the third and fourth quarter. Coach Carlisle talked about that in post-game. But I think when you step back and you add it all up, it was the summation of a great collective team effort. And that's what you've got to have going into the playoffs.
Yeah, it was a roller coaster game. You know, those guys got up on us, and they were up on us pretty much the whole game, and we made a run. You know, they came back, and you know, they had an opportunity to take the lead, and we made some great defensive plays. Monte and Dirk carried us on the offensive end. We did the things we needed to do, and it was an exciting win. And we're going forward, and we just can't do anything but smile right now.
You know, Brandon, it's interesting. Many times we highlight, like yourself, like players, coaches, you know, personnel in the front office. But I don't think we give enough credit to the Dallas Maverick fans. I mean, they have been amazing. They're not fair weather. They're there in the highs and the lows. What is it like to play in front of such a dynamic crowd? Of course, you played at the University of North Carolina. Those have great fans, too. But Maverick fans are exceptional.
They are. And the biggest thing is they come every game, no matter who we play. You can play one of the teams at the bottom of the standings. We can play the best team in the league. They're going to be here, you know, cheering. The arena's filled up every single game, and we really respect that. You know, that's always a good thing when you come out here and play and you see the stands filled up. It's a lot easier to play with, 20,000 screaming fans instead of 13,000, and you see a lot of empty seats.
Can you put into perspective just how much this team has grown and become unified over the course of an 82-game schedule? I mean, trust is the cornerstone to any good team, and it's really been remarkable to watch just how far you guys have come since the month of September.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the nail. It's been a lot of growth. You know, in the beginning of the year, we were hanging around four or five, six games over 500, and then we kept pushing it up. You know, right now we're 17 or 18, whatever, games over 500. You know, we put ourselves in a good position. There's been a lot of growth. You know, we had to come together, pretty much a brand new team this year. But we beat all the odds. You know, a lot of people didn't think we would be where we are today.
You know, chemistry is never guaranteed. I mean, it's not eHarmony.com or Match.com. It means anything like that. But I think it is just remarkable to watch how we already knew about the chemistry between you and Vince Carter. But Devin Harris missed the first 41 games. I mean, he didn't make a debut until January 17th. You have that special connection. He's throwing up alley-oops. You're making these spike dunks. And just Samuel Dalembert, just the kind of connection that you guys have on the paint. How do you do that? How do you foster that type of teamwork, Brandon?
Well, I think the biggest thing is we actually like each other. You know, sometimes teammates, they might play together, but they really don't like each other. You know, we all have great relationships off the court, which is a big thing, and it's easy to translate on the court. You know, our talents really, really, really mesh together really, really well. And, you know, when you have that type of chemistry, it's always easy to win. And then we can explain things to each other when, you know, when things don't go right.
Okay, so the Mavericks are headed to the playoffs. As you step back, you're a bright guy. What do you see is the biggest issue that you guys have got to be able to control as you move forward?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, we've been playing a lot better on the road as of late. And we started out playing really, really well this year at home. And, you know, we kind of slipped off these last couple weeks. I think we got to get that back. I think we'll be fine on the road. Veteran team, you know, it's a little bit easier for us to play on the road. But when we come home, we kind of had some letdowns, got a little bit sloppy with the ball, with the turnovers and stuff like that. I think we got to clean that up and then we'll be all right.
You know, it's interesting. Coach Carlisle was on our show a couple of weeks ago and he talked about the importance of defensive communication, how it creates energy. Can you kind of expound a little bit on that? And also what we're seeing too is better sustained concentration throughout the games. You guys are not taking possessions off and that is critical.
It is critical. And, you know, we got to have a collective effort on defense. Everyone has to be tied together. You know, you can't have three guys doing the right thing and two guys doing the wrong thing, or even four guys doing the right thing and one guy doing the wrong thing. You got to have everyone on the string, everyone talking, you know, playing hard together, communicating. Like you say, you know, if we do those things, we'll be a formidable team and a tough out.
You know, Brandon, as I look over your career, it's just been an amazing journey for you. You played at the University of North Carolina for the great Roy Williams, and now to have the opportunity to play with and for one of the elite coaches in the NBA, in my opinion, one of the top three. What is it like, and how does Coach Carlisle continue to maximize your strengths and minimize your weaknesses?
Well, that's the mark of a good coach. I mean, you know, he puts guys in position to make plays and do the things they do best. And he's not going to ask you to do more than you can do, you know, more than you can do. And, you know, he just wants you to just play your game. And he makes it really, really easy on us. And that's what he's been doing with pretty much everyone on his team.
How big of a difference was it going from college to the NBA and even the different style? I mean, what's Coach Williams' system like as opposed to Coach Carlisle's?
You know, Coach Williams is a little bit more free, you know, a little bit more track meet-esque. You know, we a lot faster, a lot younger, obviously. This team is a little bit more methodical. We run when we had an opportunity, but you know, we got a lot of skilled guys. You know, a lot of guys do what they do, and they do it really, really well. And you know, we take credit to that.
I have to ask you too, what is it like competing in the Wild Wild West? I mean, there has been so much parity in this particular conference. I mean, it's really been amazing. So many quality opponents, and you have to bring it each and every night. What is it like for you, especially in the center position?
Yeah, that's the key. You have to bring it each and every night. Even the teams at the bottom were pretty good. You know, those teams were beating top teams, playing well. You know, those teams on their home floor were really, really dynamic. And, you know, each night is a different challenge. You know, each night was a different team. Each night was a team with three or four star players on a 5-6 game winning streak.
And it was kind of baptism by fire for you when you started out with Golden State, because I thought it was interesting. I want to bring this up, Brandon. Your rookie season, you guys won 48 games with Golden State, and you were on the outside looking in. You did not make the playoffs. What lessons did you learn from that?
It was tough. You know, we started that year 0-6. You know,
really?
So, you know, it was one of those things where we were fighting the whole year, and we came up short, and probably that start hurt us. But it was a tough year. We, you know, we had a lot of good players. They were coming off the We Believe season, and you know, we just fell short at the end of the year. You know, we were disappointed at what happened, and it was a tailspin because we were even horrible. We were horrible the next season.
Brandon, you bring up a great point, because you talk about great players. Monte Ellis was one of your teammates. How excited were you to be reunited with him and to have him come back on board?
I was glad to get him over here because I knew he had went through a lot of tough times, you know, in Golden State, Milwaukee. Even though they made the playoffs last year, they knew they really didn't have a shot to compete. You know, I knew he came here to win. Took less money, you know, could have went elsewhere to get more money, but he came here to win and compete for championships.
Can I ask you, what is it like to have him as a teammate? Because when I see him in the locker room, I mean, you can ascertain a lot about a person's personality when you look in their eyes, and he is so focused. He's the kind of guy, if I was going to battle, I mean, I would be hooking up with him. I mean, he's the guy who's going to go to war, and he's going to fight for you.
Yeah, he's a tough guy. You know, he plays hard. You know, he does all the little things. He's improved each and every year, and he's a great teammate. I mean, that's all you can ask from a guy of his stature, you know, playing well. His entire career, you know, had an opportunity to come to Dallas and do great things. You know, his sky's the limit here.
Has he inspired you with even more toughness, even you, Sam D'Alembert? I mean, I've seen a little bit more of that. You guys are blanked with more nasty and edge. I mean, because when you look at Monte Ellis, I mean, he's willing to take charges against some of the biggest guys in the league. And that's got to have a spillover effect to everybody in the league, to be willing to sacrifice your body out there.
Yeah, you're right. You know, he takes charges. You know, he hits the ground a lot on offense and doesn't get the call. And he always gets back up. And that's the key. You know, when you see a guy like him doing it, you know, it makes you want to keep playing, keep, you know, forget the little bruises and bumps, you know, because he's always going to be there. You know, he's a tough guy. You know, I never seen him, you know, not play after an injury unless it was really, really significant.
Do you think toughness, that it can be learned? Because I'm seeing more of that as you continue to blossom and to grow. We're seeing, as Rolando Blackman said last year, we want to see a little bit more Kevin Garnett out of you. We are seeing that now.
I think it is. You know, you grow into it. You know, you know, you have your style when you first come in, but you can learn things. You know, you take tricks from different players, you know, different situations, and you know, when it gets tough, you know, you need to get tough.
Well, you have that hit-first mentality, as Coach Carlisle says. Be an agitator, not just an irritator. One of the questions I have to ask you is, everyone always says, when you talk to Brandon Wright, he has that be-ready mentality. What is the key to being an efficient role player, consistency? I know you love baseball, and it's kind of like being a relief pitcher, isn't it? I mean, because you've always got to be ready.
Yeah, you don't know when your number's going to be
called.
Right, I mean, that's the thing. You know, you got to be ready. Got to do the things to take care of yourself off the court, to be in that situation, to be ready, and just keep your head focused. I mean, that's what it comes down to, you know, just staying humble and approaching the game is, you know, is your last every day.
You know, throughout the course of an 82-game schedule, I mean, there are so many ups and downs. Brandon, kind of share a little bit with us. Who is your point person in your life that you reach out to, or perhaps text message, or, you know, want to, you know, pick up the phone and call to kind of encourage you through when you guys have some rough spots or you just need that word of encouragement?
Well, I'm always talking to my spiritual leaders. I think that's the biggest thing.
Dr. Tony Evans?
He's one of the guys, you know.
Love him.
I see him a lot. You know, my spiritual leaders back at home. I mean, that's all I can lean on, you know. That's when it gets down and dirty, that's what you need to go to. You can't really rely on a friend, you know. I say you can't really even rely on your parents. You know, you want to go to those spiritual leaders. You want to get that comfort. You want to get that ease, and you just want to have your mind clear.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because it seems like it's not just about basketball for you. You've just taken a tremendous amount of joy and pleasure in giving back. I mean, what is that like for you, knowing that you are a role model to so many young men and women out there?
It's big.
It's a responsibility.
It is a responsibility. You affect so many lives. A lot of people are looking at you. They're looking for you to make the wrong moves so they can criticize you or give you bad publicity. It's one of those things where, you know, a lot of people are looking up to you, and you don't want to make those mistakes, and, you know, you don't want other kids to follow in your footsteps if you do the wrong things.
Where did you learn and have that spirit of humility? Did that come from your parents? Because I want to bring this up, that you went to Brentwood Academy in Nashville, Tennessee, where you won 4 state championships. That's incredible. And I was asking you this about when we were in San Antonio before the game. I said, man, you must have a huge scrapbook of all the colleges that had recruited you. And you're like, nah, I didn't keep any of that stuff. And that just really gave me a glimpse of the posture of your heart and the kind of person that you are. You're not caught up into all of that and all the media attention, stuff like that. It really is about being the consummate teammate, giving back, and helping out. You're not just caught up in all that.
Well, the biggest thing I was taught from my parents is, you know, be thankful. There's always someone in a worse situation than you, guaranteed. And that's the biggest thing I can take from, you know, them. And, you know, I think about that every day. Every day I wake up is, you know, thank God for another day. You know, it's another opportunity to be better, another opportunity to be thankful for what I do have and not what I don't have.
And of course, your biggest blessing, one of them, that is being a part of this organization and being with the Dallas Mavericks. Brandon, it's been such a pleasure to have you. Good luck. I hope you guys have a very deep run and bring home another championship. Okay?
Appreciate you having me. Thank you.
And a very special thank you to the Dallas Mavericks and Brandon Wright. Enjoyed that exclusive interview with him. Of course, you can check him out on Sunday as Dallas is in San Antonio. They tip at noon and getting you ready for the NBA playoffs. We have a step aside, much more straight ahead at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter at E Radio Sports, and we will be right back. Elissa Walker-Campbell, we are back with you at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And before we get underway with our next interview, we want you to join us online at Twitter at E Radio Sports. Also, our radio website, that is eradiosports.com. And as promised, it is now time to focus our attention. We're going to go around the horn. We're going to talk about the New York Yankees and analyze how the season has played out so far over the first couple of weeks. And I want to listen in on who are some of the key additions and subtractions and what guys have stepped in immediately and made a difference. So we have invited on Chris Donnelly. He is the author of a new book titled How the Yankees Explain New York. Good evening, Chris. It's wonderful to have you with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show.
Good evening, Liz. Thanks for having me on.
Well, Chris, I am definitely looking forward to our conversation tonight because, like I said, I've got a number of burning questions, always a curiosity on the Yankees. And last year, if you recap, you step back, what, in 2013, they were 85-77, third in the AL East. But coming into the 2014 season, they had a completely, what, revamped roster due to a number of injuries from last year. How have things been playing out for them so far?
So far, I think the team has been doing well, maybe even overachieving a little bit. The pitching staff has really held up. Tanaka and Pineda, two really new additions. And Pineda was traded for a couple of years ago, but because of injuries, hasn't been on the team until this year, have excelled wonderfully in their first 3 starts. They've been the best pitchers on the team. Ivanova has pitched well, a shaky first start, but it looks like he's been doing better. Kuroda has pitched well, as was expected. CC Sabathia, a little bit of a question mark. His fastball is clearly not what it used to be, so he looks like he's going to be more of a finesse pitcher, has yet to really find it so far, had a couple of bad starts. And the offense is starting to come together. They're leading the league in batting average. They've added some speed to their game. They're first in the league in stolen bases. So they're playing well in the first 2 or 3 weeks, and the question's going to be is can they keep it up and can they stay healthy over the course of the season?
Chris, you bring up a number of great points, and let's talk about offensively because they are hitting the ball well. How big of that credit do you give to even a Jacoby Ellsbury and a Carlos Beltran?
Well, Ellsbury has just been on fire since the start of the season, and the speed he brings is a game changer. He and Brett Gardner, two of the fastest guys in the American League. And what's great is not only do they steal bases, they don't get caught very often. Ellsbury, I believe, has only been caught once so far this season. It's a new dimension to this team that not only does speed change it just in terms of taking the additional base, getting yourself in scoring position or getting yourself to third, it frees up the hitters because they're going to see better pitches. Pitchers are going to throw more fastballs to people like a Carlos Beltran or a Brian McCann. Beltran has gotten out of the gate. He started off slow the first couple of games, but he's been coming on strong of lately, leading the team in home runs and RBIs. He's a great fit in that stadium. Brian McCann, he's going to hit. He's been hitting really well. He's been hitting the ball hard. He's just been sort of hitting into some bad luck with the shift. But you can tell he's going to do well in that stadium. And, again, it's just a matter of staying healthy with guys like Ellsbury and McCann. And we'll see how it plays out.
Well, Brian, now he had, the injured right index finger. I mean, has that bothered him at all or slowed him down a bit?
It doesn't really look like it because, like I said, he has been hitting the ball hard. He's just been hitting into some bad luck. The average would indicate that, yes, he's not at full capacity. But if you've watched the games, you see that he has been crushing the ball and some really just unfortunate positioning against him, or great positioning, depending on how you look at it. The second baseman or the shortstop out in short right field has robbed him of at least three or four hits in the last week. So it looks like he's okay. It's really just some bad luck so far.
Chris Donnelly is joining us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show, the author of his new book. You got to go out and get a copy of it. It is titled How the Yankees Explain New York. And I know our segment's going super fast, but I definitely have to ask you while you're on. Let's zero in on Derek Jeter. I mean, of course, he plans on retiring at the end of this season and only played in, 17 games last year in 2013 because of just all those different injuries. How is the farewell tour going this year?
Well, so far, so good. I'm sure the teams aren't happy after thinking so hard of all the gifts they had to give Mariano last year that they have to think of all the new gifts to Derek Jeter. But it's going well, and Jeter's just the kind of guy who isn't going to give... you don't think he's going to give much thought to, this is my last at-bat here, this is my last inning here. He's more focused on having a great season. If you know the way Derek Jeter has been over the years, he's focused on winning.
Oh, yes.
I think he wants to go out with a championship. So his focus is on winning games, getting back into the playoffs, and bringing a world title to New York before he signs off.
20 years with the franchise. I mean, what a remarkable run, has meant so much to Yankees baseball. So tell us about your book, How the Yankees Explain New York. Where can the listeners get it, and what was the inspiration behind this book?
Sure. Well, it's available online, Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, any place where you can buy books. It talks about the unique parallels that the Yankees and New York City have run on since the start of the early 20th century. If you love history, both as a sports fan and as just a fan of history in general, I think you'll love this book.
Well, Chris, congratulations on the book. Again, it is titled How the Yankees Explain New York, and they focus on the affinity New Yorkers have for this team in the pinstripes. It's a wonderful read. We want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of it. Chris, thank you so much for joining us this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Always an open invitation. We look forward to catching up with you again real soon in your next book, okay?
Yes, and thank you for having me. Much appreciated.
We got to step aside. We're up against the break. Much more straight ahead this weekend at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Stay close.
All right, guys, so check this out. Have you ever heard of Gold Belly? Okay, so it's this amazing site where you can order the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants all across the country, and they will ship it straight to your door. That's right. These guys will ship you Philly cheesesteaks from Jim's or Pat's in Philly, Buffalo wings from the Anchor Bar in Buffalo, and even Kansas City's most legendary barbecue. So, if you're looking to host an epic Super Bowl party, go to GoldBelly.com and get free shipping and 20% off your first order with promo code GAMEDAY.